financial empire of billions of dollars without some kind of bloated Herculean self-confidence, but he's not going to tell you how to live your life. He's not going to hit you over the head with a cross or thump you with a Bible. I have a very strict firewall between the concept of preserving borders, language, and culture, and the sickness of racism or telling people how to live their lives. Unfortunately, many conservatives are low-information voters as well. They scream and rant on blogs against anyone who doesn't say the right things. They think that limitation makes them intellectuals. They are the minions the community organizers on the right are now using to tell you that Trump is not a conservative, or Michael Savage is not a conservative, or this one or that one is not a conservative. They'd be shocked to find out in how many ways Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan were not true conservatives. Does anyone remember that Reagan was a union leader of the Screen Actors Guild before he was a politician? You don't think some of those ideas stayed with him into the presidency? Whenever I hear people pointing fingers and saying, "You're not a real conservative, he's not a real conservative, only I know what a real conservative is," I'm reminded of communist organizers in the Soviet Union. They also wanted a purity test. They also drummed people out of their movement who were not pure enough. Did you know that this didactic mentality comes directly from Vladimir Lenin? What I'm proposing is this. We're living in a constantly evolving world. If you want to be a fanatic and rigidly define conservatism and its principles based on what someone wrote hundreds of years ago, I have a question for you. Who alive today obeys your edicts 100%? People like this remind me of preachers who ascend the pulpit with their Bible saying, "Jesus is going to punish you. Many of you don't believe, but if you do believe, God will come down and save you tonight." Then the next day, they're seen with a boy in a car outside the church. Who will save that little boy from them? Other conservatives? Men who have their own flaws and corruption? Fear those who make themselves out to be holier than thou. I'm warning you to watch out for fanatics on both sides of the aisle. They've called me a chameleon for not rigidly adhering to the didactic definition of what a conservative is. But that doesn't make me a chameleon. My beliefs are very strong, but they're also very forgiving and inclusive. Anyone can believe in borders, language, and culture. Any American would support them. That's why I told you in my last book that a nationalist party would attract millions of liberals as well as conservatives. And Donald Trump is a nationalist. I was right, because the GOP is his party now. Efforts will be made to steal it from him, to shove the party back into a dark, unenlightened corner, but it will fail. The GOP has changed forever. The Senate Democrat Islamist Socialist Party blocked the Syrian refugee bill. It was a Republican bill to curb the flow of Syrian and Iraqi refugees into the United States in order to prevent terrorists from slipping in. The Democrats said they wouldn't even discuss it. Democrats such as Dianne Feinstein, whose friends and associates must profit somehow from the refugee flow, wouldn't even allow the bill to come to an up or down vote. President Mao Obama said he'd veto the bill if it made it to his desk. That's because he wants a flood of refugees to come into America. They are the living personification of his orientation, his proclivities, and his friendships. But do people care? You know the answer. You see it every time an Islamofascist kills innocent people in the workplace, at a train station, at a restaurant, at a fireworks display in Nice. The left lectures us to go along and get along, while the right spouts warnings, then slips into a stupor with their mouths full of hamburger and beer, like former Speaker of the House John Tipsy Boehner. Do their extreme definitions help you define who you are? Or are you going to insist on excluding anyone who opposes the Democrats on this and says those people are not your allies? Trump's not your ally because he's not pure enough on other issues. Does that mean you'd rather have another Democrat win the presidency because you're such a fanatical believer in your view of what a conservative should be as opposed to what a conservative needs to be? You lost in the bare-knuckle game of national politics, and now you're in a bad mood? Grow up. Go vote for Grandma Clinton and see how conservative her administration is. It's instructive but ultimately unavailing to quote a textbook on what a conservative is. Edmund Burke has been dead for 200 years. We have to live as conservatives in the 21st century. I am a true conservative who understands what is the same and what is different about being a conservative in this century. Borders, language, and culture has been my motto since I started in radio in 1994. It has been the essence of conservatism throughout British and American history. What is different is the means needed to conserve our borders, language, and culture amid the challenges they face today in the real world, a world in which they are under attack by both atheistic socialist progressives and theocratic Islamofascists who are 9th century throwbacks. Policies that Burke or even William F. Buckley Jr. proposed have nothing to do with the threats conservatives face today. I am a true conservative who hopes to help you define who you are. Corruption festers in both parties. The world is falling apart because New World Order universalists such as Barry Obama, Germany's Angela Merkel, and the United Nations have been flooding the civilized world with unvetted Muslims. No one even talks about the rape epidemic anymore. In Germany, if German men stand up and defend their fellow citizens, they're attacked by the police. The police in Germany, who should be attacking migrants and throwing them out of the country, are attacking the nationalists who are trying to protect their women and children. The very same dynamic is playing out in the United States of America. It's just in an earlier stage. There are millions of men who would like to rise up in this country and protect this nation. In January, Obama freed an Al-Qaeda explosives expert from Gitmo. Did you hear what I just told you? He gave a bomb maker back to the terrorists. Obama is acting like a rogue president, a criminal president. Hillary Clinton had an email scandal that would have resulted in the indictment and imprisonment of anyone else. General David Petraeus was broken for doing less, but nothing happens to her. The only explanation is that the retrovirus of corruption which invaded this nation has reached a critical mass. The fundamental problem, as I see it, is that many people of the 1960s were free spirits, and many of them got stuck in that headspace, as they used to call it. They're like bugs that fell into resin and became frozen in time. They still espouse 1960s philosophy, the same mantras that were placed in their heads by the communists of the 1930s who ran the hippie movement of the 1960s. They never evolved, and they don't even understand that they have destroyed their own lives and their own nation. There are millions of people like that. They are all over Hollywood and in the universities, unable to move on, unable to evolve, unable to see what they're doing to this nation. They take their marching orders directly from the White House without even knowing it. That's how evil and dangerous this retrovirus is. We are living in very strange times. The cheeseheads versus the knockwurst heads. Members of one party wear blocks of cheese on their heads. Members of the other party wear knockwursts on their heads. The corruption on both sides is equivalent, and the people who represent both sides are equivalent. There is almost no difference in the corruption and the hypocrisy of either side, which is why a true independent such as myself is misunderstood, reviled, and distrusted by both sides. The cheeseheads and the knockwurst heads don't own me. They can't make any money with me, and they cannot control me. So I'm a threat to them. If you think back to the Reagan administration, many of you think Ronald Reagan was as clean as the driven snow, and there was no corruption. Well, there was corruption. His attorney general, Edwin Meese, was the most corrupt attorney general until the first one we had under Obama. The only difference is that Eric Holder, Obama's first attorney general, was ideologically corrupt. He was never caught being corrupt for money. Trust me, those types of people are more dangerous than those who do it for money. But Meese was corrupt, too. Think all the way back to President Reagan's press secretary, Lynn Nofsinger. Why am I calling him corrupt? Well, you have to look up the WedTech scandal, and you have to find out how, through Elizabeth Dole's relationship with Nofsinger, WedTech was given a $32 million contract to produce small engines for the U.S. Army. WedTech ended up with around $250 million in no-bid contracts, which was a lot of manufacturing money in those days. During Reagan's second term, WedTech's crimes kept piling up. Even Edwin Meese couldn't help but get caught up in the scandals. An independent counsel appointed by Congress said he was complicit. Why? Because Meese's close friend had worked as a lobbyist for the company and sought help from Meese on WedTech contract matters. Meese was dirty, but his dirty friends in the administration helped him wash his hands. He resigned in 1988 after the independent counsel wrapped up its investigation. Even though nobody ever brought charges against Meese, the counsel criticized Meese's ethics and other scandalous activities and cronyism perpetrated by the Reagan White House. Yes, I'm telling you about corruption in the administration of that revered Republican icon. Read about the WedTech scandal, and you'll find out that this poison has run through our political system for a very long time. This is why the establishment hates Donald Trump. Is he perfect? No. Will he be a perfect this or a perfect that? No. That's what's freaking them out. They don't know which lobbyist to pay off to reach Donald Trump, and they are panicking because they may have to work for a living. Compare that with Hillary Clinton, who Trump said may be the most corrupt person to ever seek the presidency. Take a look at her money sources, if you can find them. I'll tell you who some of them are. They're from front groups for all of those Islamic countries who hate us. Look up her donors and you'll see. Here are some more. The Chinese. While she was negotiating policy with China, the Chinese government was paying Bill Clinton to give speeches. You might say that Donald Trump has also gotten paid for giving speeches, and you'd be right. But there's one difference. Trump wasn't a politician. He didn't get paid for giving speeches while he was in a position to potentially influence policy. Donald Trump is a successful businessman, and people want to hear what he has to say. That's why he got paid to give speeches. But since he added presidential candidate to his resume, he's not getting paid to give speeches. It's an ongoing war between the good nationalists and the corrupt politicians, between good and evil, between sanity and insanity. It's not too late to stop the bad guys, but time is definitely running out. Diversity is destroying democracy. Europe has been swamped with Muslim refugees, and some of America's so-called leaders, the misleaders, want to see the same thing happen here. One article after another describes this crisis. Sweden, close to collapse from the Gatestone Institute. Germany, in grip of Muslim takeover from Liberal Forum. You know something's gotten bad when the liberals notice it. Even Reuters, which once decried the term terrorist as insensitive, if you can believe that, has reported on it. The people are opposed to what is effectively jihad through overpopulation. It's like a swarm of army ants that moves into some other insect colony and takes over the tunnels. The so-called leadership of these countries is opposing the will of the people and is in favor of eliminating the culture of their countries. Where will it end, and how will it affect us? Dick Turbin Durbin is true to his name. He's a Democratic senator from Illinois, and he was given the nickname Turbin Durbin a long time ago. Turbin Durbin has called for 100,000 Syrian refugees to be accepted by the United States of America. You read that right. Not 10,000, as Barack al-Husseini wanted, but 100,000. Turbin Durbin figured he'd raise the stakes. Why? Because this is the way liberal gangsters work. Raise the stakes. Make it outrageous. If you say it's going to be 100,000, these leftist thugs will settle for 50,000. Whether you think this country should take in more refugees from Syria at all is the primary question. Turbin Durbin got his name because he attacked our troops a number of years ago during the war in Afghanistan, comparing them to Nazis. We know he's a fellow traveler with the opposition. There's no question about it. And I don't mean the Muslim opposition. It is Muslims fighting Muslims right now. It is moderate Muslims, such as the King of Jordan and the leader of Egypt, who are fighting the radical, insane lunatics. So it's not about Muslims. It's about the fanatics that are being brought in and swept into Europe, hiding under the skirts of the refugees. That's a separate issue. How many refugees can we take in, especially those who will never, ever assimilate into this culture? Not in 1,000 years will they assimilate. It's not in their culture to assimilate. That's the way they work. Even British socialists such as Tony Blair had to admit that their idea of multiculturalism had resulted in cults that will not become Brits. This is a tough issue for all of us, because we have all been the children of immigrants at a certain point. Everyone in America is an immigrant, including the Native Americans. Yes, they had been here before the so-called white man arrived, and they had been here for a long time. I studied this as a young anthropologist and came to understand the time frame of the Native American peoples, how long they had been here before the colonists arrived from Europe. If you study more deeply and go past the surface in anthropology, you will learn that there are traces of people who were here before the Native Americans. There are skeletons of Caucasian-looking people who were here before the Native Americans. They were thrown out by the Smithsonian Institution because the fact of their existence embarrassed certain individuals. Thrown out faster than that same museum wanted to toss the Enola Gay, the plane that dropped the first atom bomb, because it might offend the Japanese. You remember, the nation that started that damn war in the Pacific? Like the army ants I mentioned, the history of life on Earth is about invasion, and human beings are no exception. We're being invaded right now. We're being invaded from the south. We're being invaded from the north, from the east, and from the west. You might say, well, that's the way of things, and you might get used to it. They're here, they're near, they're everywhere. The question is, why are liberals so quick to embrace this invasion? And why are traditionalists and conservatives like myself so resistant to erasing the borders, language, and culture of this great nation? As an immigrant's son, I think about the refugee crisis every day. As an immigrant's son, I have to ask myself, why do I oppose relocating 100,000 Syrian refugees into this country? The embarrassing point is that people will always compare the situation to the Jews and the Holocaust. That is the underlying motif of the entire liberal establishment. The emotional substratum of this entire argument is based upon the Jews in Nazi Germany. And it's a false argument. It's a false one on many levels. I'm sure you can figure out why it's false and why the narrative is being used by those who want to flood the United States with refugees for their own reasons. Lutheran Family Services is accepting refugees only for the money. It's on board with Turban Durban, demanding 100,000 refugees because they make money off of them. They're doing it because they're greedy. They're doing it because they make money off it. There's a lot of self-interest. There's a lot of greed. And the comparison to the Jews fleeing Germany during the Holocaust is an unsound analogy for a number of reasons. It's not Jews running from the gas chambers. This is Muslims running toward financial gain at your expense. The fact of the matter is that wherever they go, Sweden, Norway, Denmark, Germany, they abuse the social service welfare systems. How can we take care of refugees when we have so many indigenous poor already? What? Is everybody here rich? All of a sudden, the country is rolling in money? All of a sudden, Obama has cleared everything up and there are no poor in this country who need the help of the government? There's something wrong with this picture. For many years, I've preached that ultra-tolerance is killing us, and now we have a brainwashed generation of children raised on Adderall, marijuana, other toxic compounds, with skimpy vegan and other inadequate diets and outright brainwashing in the government schools where they fully believe things that are false as though they are truths. They have no religion but liberalism. They have been taught to live by the Ten Commandments of liberalism. Man is evil and poisoning the earth. The earth is a living organism and needs to be protected. All white people are racist. All people of color are good. All refugees should be allowed in and given whatever they request. If people make too much money, it should be taken from them. Government handouts have no price tag. Nature should be protected at all costs unless you don't like your gender. Burning the American flag is protected speech. All players on the international stage have equal credibility. And so, our brainwashed, drugged youth cast their brainwashed, drug youth votes. We have immigrants who want things for free who are being legitimized in an illegitimate way. Jerry Brown, for example, with his criminal ways, has allowed the Department of Motor Vehicles in California to automatically register illegal aliens so that they guarantee not a one-party system, which is what we already have, but a no-party system. Just an autocrat, no party necessary. Just an autocrat in Sacramento, an autocrat in Washington. This is the dissolution of democracy itself under the guise of diversity. Diversity is destroying democracy. Competition is healthy. The story of my aloe plant surrounded by tomatoes. The country with the best educated workforce in the world is going to win the 21st century economy, says Barry Obama. I want that to be America. That must be why he has been bringing in people who don't even have a first grade education. That makes sense. The best educated workforce in the world is going to win the 21st century economy. So he keeps on bringing in people, many of whom can't even read or write in Spanish. Then he goes on to push free college their way. Here's socialism, where everything is free. I would have liked to have gone to college for nothing, too. I had to work, but it didn't hurt me. It gave me life experience, work experience. It made me stronger and made me a better asset to the community and the economy. I learned what it takes to earn for myself and to contribute to society in the process. And I learned that nothing is free. The money has to come from someone's earnings. Giving free education to people robs them of all these lessons and inhibits their personal growth, as well as the growth and prosperity of the society that has to carry them and their lack of understanding for the rest of their lives. You can learn a lot from a garden. I have a garden on the side of my house where I grow tomatoes. They're planted in late February. Normally they're gone by August. But last year they were still a little green going into September. With such global warming as we supposedly have, they should have ripened in July. I planted an aloe vera plant in the same garden a few winters ago. It never took off. I placed it toward the back. It didn't like it there. I don't know what it was. It wasn't growing. No matter what I did, it wouldn't grow. It just didn't like it. It looked like it was going to die on me. It was hanging in there, just hanging on, hanging on. The tomatoes, of course, grow like Jack and the Beanstalk in front of and all around the aloe, and then behind the aloe comes up basil that I planted years ago. It grew up out of soil again and started smothering the aloe. The other plants blocked every bit of light from that aloe, but in the process, as it was engulfed by the other plants, it started to grow, and soon it was 3 times taller than before it was surrounded by the competing plants. As the tomatoes and basil engulfed the aloe and competed with it, the aloe vera plant began to get taller and bigger. Why? It's called competition. That's something Barry Obama, who has been hand-carried by others his entire life straight into the White House, has never learned. You're better off listening to a plant. Chapter 4. Our Ignorance of History. The Palestinians and Hitler worked together to exterminate Jews. There was a show on the military channel entitled Nazi Collaborators, the Grand Mufti, a.k.a. Good or Evil, which discussed Muhammad Amin al-Husseini, the Muslim Grand Mufti of Jerusalem during World War II, and how he collaborated with Hitler, how the Muslims wanted to build gas chambers in the Middle East to exterminate the Jews. This should be a wake-up call to all of the liberals who hate Israel, many of whom say they're not anti-Semitic because they're Jewish themselves, yet they're anti-Zionist. What these fools should know is that Husseini wanted to exterminate the Jews in the Middle East before Israel was even created. I'm talking about 1940, 41, 42. Husseini worked with Hitler, got the plans for gas chambers from the Nazis, and wanted to round up all the Jews in every country in the Middle East and exterminate them. We keep hearing that the Jews kicked the Palestinians off their own land and that the Palestinians are the underdogs. Those underdogs claim that the Jews are evil imperialists who stole the land. I've heard it all. I've analyzed it all. And I'm sure there are some cases of land appropriation being true in the Middle East, in Israel. But there are many cases of that not being true. In many cases, the Arabs gladly sold garbage land to the Jews. Garbage, useless rocky hillsides that they could not cultivate for thousands of years, but that the Jews made flour and grew crops on. Then, at the same time that Israel was created, the Muslims went on the war path in northern Africa. Does Libya ring a bell? Algeria? Look at the countries of North Africa. Jewish people lived there for 500 years, longer if you include the centuries when they were in bondage. Guess what your friends the Muslims did to the Jews? They stole their land and kicked them out of the country. Around 700,000 Jews were thrown out of northern Africa. Not only was their land stolen, but also their possessions, their bank accounts, everything. They were driven out. Where did the Jews go? They went to Israel. It was the only place on earth that would take them. Who was the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem? Husseini. For one, he was a very wealthy man. See, not all Palestinians were poor. He was one of the most powerful and richest men among the rivaling clans in the Ottoman province known as the Judean part of Palestine. But he joined the Muslim Brotherhood in 1928, the year it was created, and he transplanted the Nazi genocide in Europe into the post-war Middle East. That was before Israel was created. This is for you brainwashed youths who think that the Muslims would be fine if there was no Israel, if only Israel would give up the West Bank and Judea and Samaria. Before Israel was even created, Husseini wanted a Nazi genocide against the Jews. In 1929, this wonderful Palestinian went along with the statement, "He who kills a Jew is assured a place in the next world." As a result of that, Arabs went on a rampage throughout Palestine. They killed 133 Jews and wounded 339. In 1933, Husseini had his first meeting with Nazi Consul General Heinrich Wolff in Jerusalem. In 1936, Husseini's incitement led to more rioting in Jaffa. It led to a three-year intifada. In 1937, he met with Adolf Eichmann and Herbert Hagen, who was one of Eichmann's colleagues in the Gestapo's Department for Jewish Affairs. Eichmann ordered that Nazi flags be flown in Palestine and that Palestinians adorn their houses with swastikas and portraits of Hitler. That was before Israel was created. During World War II, Husseini lived in Berlin, where he traveled in top Nazi circles. He even stayed in Hitler's bunker toward the end of the war. In 1941, Husseini issued a fatwa calling for the Germans to bomb Tel Aviv. At a meeting in Berlin in November 1941, Hitler assured Husseini that his goal was the destruction of Jews, all Jews, living in Arabia. Hitler provided Husseini with a monthly budget to wage jihad in Palestine. Hitler gave Husseini a radio station where he preached genocide in Arabic. He said this, "According to the Muslim religion, the defense of your life is a duty which can only be fulfilled by annihilating the Jews. This is your best opportunity to get rid of this dirty race which has usurped your rights and brought misfortune and destruction on your countries. Kill the Jews, burn their property, destroy their stores. Your sole hope of salvation lies in annihilating the Jews before they annihilate you." That was all before Israel was founded. And it's for all you fools who think that the Palestinians only want the land that was stolen from them. This is a lesson they don't teach at Harvard. Near the end of the war, Husseini went on his radio show and preached this, and he was the most powerful Arab at the time. Don't underestimate his influence. He said, "The Versailles Treaty was a disaster for the Germans as well as the Arabs. But the Germans know how to get rid of the Jews. The Germans have never harmed any Muslim, and they are again fighting our common enemy who persecuted Arabs and Muslims. But most of all, they have definitely solved the Jewish problem. Arabs," he concluded, "rise as one to protect your sacred rights. Kill the Jews wherever you find them. Allah is with you." This was also on the military channel, and it is 100% accurate. For 2 years, beginning at the age of 16, around 1945, a terrorist named Yasser Arafat worked for the Mufti, helping to buy and smuggle weapons in the war against Jews. Many reports say that Arafat was Husseini's nephew or cousin. That genocidal lunatic died in 2004, but the hate spawned by the Grand Mufti lives on. So does the desire to build gas chambers. How guns saved Jews from the Nazis, and why the left wants yours. There is an article entitled How Guns Saved 20,000 Jews from Extermination by the Nazis. I would like to share it with liberals who are afraid of guns. Most liberals fear guns, but they should know that during the Holocaust, when 6 million Jews and 8 million to 9 million non-Jews were exterminated by the fascist government of Nazi Germany, groups of Jews who fled into the woods of Belarus used guns. The most famous group I know of is the Bielski Partisan Group, the most significant Jewish resistance effort against Nazi Germany during World War II. We hear all the time that the Jews didn't fight back. That's a myth. They did fight back. They were simple men, not rich men, not elitists. They were local guys living in a village. But after the Germans slaughtered their parents and two brothers in the Novogradec ghetto in December 1941, three surviving brothers of the Bielski family became great heroes. Tuvia, Azel, and Zeus established a partisan group and fled into the Zabilovo and Perlaz forests to save their own lives and those of their immediate family. They formed the nucleus of a partisan detachment, consisting at first of only 30 family members and friends. How did they survive in those woods? In addition to food, they knew they needed guns. How did they get guns? There were no guns allowed in that country at that time, other than shotguns. They had to either break into farmhouses and steal them, or lie in wait for Nazis and knife them in the neck and steal their guns. Yes, ordinary men like you and I had to kill in order to live, to kill or be killed. But it was the guns that saved 20,000 Jews from extermination by the Nazis, not to mention the millions of others who were saved by the guns and bombs of our military, the Russian military, the British military, the Australian military, the New Zealand military, and all the others who fought the scourge of Hitler. It was guns that saved everyone. It was not hot air, and it was not tears. It was certainly not crocodile tears or protest marches. Those boys, the Bielskis, were just a Jewish farming family living in a village. They knew every tree in the woods. They knew every reed of grass in the swamps, and that helped save them too. Because they were familiar with the geography, the customs, and the people around them, they were able to elude the German authorities and their Belarusian auxiliaries. With the help of non-Jewish Belarusian friends, they were able to acquire guns, guns, and more guns. The Bielski partisans later supplemented those arms with captured German weapons, Soviet weapons, and equipment supplied by Soviet partisans who gave the Jews more guns to fight the Nazis. There was a movie made about this in 2008 called Defiance. Watch this incredible movie to see how they saved 20,000 Jews from extermination thanks to guns. When I hear from a madman like Obama that he believes in the Second Amendment and he points to a piece of paper, every fiber of my being goes into alarm mode because I saw Hitler do a similar thing when he came to power and pointed to a piece of paper. I've seen others point to pieces of paper, too. I've never seen a dictator do something illegal that he admitted was illegal. Have you? Have you ever seen a dictator do anything illegal? It's all in the interpretation, the spin, the sociopathic lie. For example, when Hitler invaded surrounding nations, he didn't say he was invading them to take anything. He said, "This is a perfectly legal move on the part of the German people to recapture territory that belonged to Germany. We have no intent to harm our friends in Czechoslovakia or Poland. We're simply taking back what is ours. I have it on a piece of paper right here. This was our land." It's just like the bullies I grew up with in my Queens neighborhood. A bully would never strike a smaller kid without first coming up with a pretext for hitting the smaller kid. He would make up a reason in his sociopathic, cowardly mind for attacking the smaller kid. Then he would attack the smaller kid after stating his big lie. The sociopath in the White House has done the same thing over and over and over again. One lie after another. You or I can't yell fire in a theater, but he can yell fire in the White House. He can yell fire in the White House every day. He can set the nation on fire, pitting black against white, gay against straight, old against young, young against old. Yes, he can set the world afire, pitting Sunni against Shiite, laughing all the way with his sorority around him, his radical wife Michelle, and his senior advisor without portfolio or legitimacy, Valerie Jarrett. Does this sociopath also believe in the First Amendment for himself, but think that a modest background check should be conducted by his government goons before any of us is able to criticize the government through criticizing him? Try, and you will find out that his government goons have the right to declare you mentally unstable and prevent you from owning a gun. Again, this was something that was done in the Soviet Union. I'm not an alarmist. I'm a realist. It starts with very small steps, smaller steps indeed than you could ever imagine in a nation as polarized as this, with the protections that were built in by men fathoms beyond this little man, protections now being dismembered by this Quisling. What will get us where we need to go is the law, and nothing but the law. This little man, from God knows where, knows that he has violated the law. He knows that this is illegal, and he knows that a president cannot make law. He knows all of this, as do the Lilliputians around him. Loretta Lynch is a low-grade lawyer from the bowels of the New York court system, hand-picked by Al Sharpton, one of the scummiest people on the planet, to be our attorney general. She was never qualified for the position, yet there she sits as though she were a legal expert. Has she ever written a paper that any jurist in the nation would ever quote? No. She's another member of the sorority who now happens to be the number one cop in the United States. Remember what the number one cop in the United States did almost the first day that she was appointed. She threatened anyone who said anything bad about Muslims. This sociopathic, fascistic administration says it believes in the Second Amendment, but that's a lie. After the Orlando shootings, Obama directed his ire at gun ownership. After the attack in Nice, he had nothing to say about rental trucks. Loretta Lynch said things about the First Amendment that were identical. Identical in tone. Identical in her disrespect for the Constitution. On December 4, 2015, our Attorney General, the protector of our laws, said, "Now, obviously, this is a country that is based on free speech. But when it edges towards violence, when we see the potential for someone to lifting that mantle of anti-Muslim rhetoric, or as we saw after 9/11, violence directed at individuals who may not even be Muslims, but may be perceived to be Muslims, and they will suffer just as well, just as much. When we see that, we will take action." There she is, saying she believes in the First Amendment and free speech, but when it edges toward violence, we will take action. Then we heard the same thing from the so-called constitutional lawyer in the White House, another great genius. He knows something about the Constitution. He knows enough about it to go around it. I know other leftists who studied constitutional law, and they only did so only to get around it. He says today, "Oh, I believe in the Second Amendment, but we need restrictions on it." I told you, he's a sociopath. I told you, he wouldn't stop. I pondered in 2015, what might the sociopath do in his last year? Well, now we've seen the sociopath calling for federalizing all local police departments through ACLU oversight. The very same anti-American, anti-Christian, anti-police, leftist thugs who now oversee Chicago's police, he wants to oversee all police departments. There were no tears when Kate Steinle was gunned down by an illegal alien in San Francisco. No, he didn't have tears for Kate Steinle, because it's a sanctuary city created by him and his goons. The murder weapon was a gun stolen from a federal agent who never went to jail. The great president didn't even call the Steinle family and offer condolences. And what did he do right after 5 Dallas police were killed by a black radical? He called for police oversight as he feasted and dined in Poland, surrounded by his Eurotrash, One World EU buddies. Here is what we must do. We must remember that executive orders can be overridden. The single best example of executive orders that were overridden by the Supreme Court was that of Harry Truman, who tried to take over a steel plant during a strike in order to control the strikers. The case went to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court said, "No, no, you can't do that. You can't make law." Obama knows that. He's an educated man. He went to Harvard. He went to day school in Honolulu, courtesy of his wealthy grandparents. There was no mother, since she ran off with his second Muslim father and ditched her son. That, of course, left him scarred completely with a lot of internal rage, but we won't go into the psychology of the sociopath. We will talk strictly about the issue at hand, which is the mental illness in the White House and where that is leading the rest of us. We have learned that the sociopathic snake in the White House has hundreds of millions of dollars for background checks for legal gun owners, but did not have any such funding for background checks on Muslims of military age coming into this country from Syria, Muslims who are mainly males in their 20s. He had no money to do any background checks on the millions of illegal aliens pouring over the southern border of the United States, nor their health statuses. For the millions of invaders that he pours into America, he didn't have the funds to stop them or to do vetting on them. No money to vet the Syrian Muslim immigrants flooding America. But now, suddenly, he has hundreds of millions of dollars to spend on background checks for legal gun owners. We can all see two and two come together. Most Americans today have no sense of history. Not only do they not know their own history and could not care less about their own history, but they know less about any other nation's history, which is why Americans today are so vulnerable to manipulation. Where will America's Bielski partisans get their guns should they need them to defend themselves? From the Iceman to the Nice Man. Headline out of Sweden. A cruise for Swedish high school students on a luxury ship, the MS Galaxy. At sea, 5 Muslims gang-raped an unidentified Swedish woman. When the ship docked in Finland, the Muslims were arrested and went laughing all the way to the politically correct Finnish police station. Of course, after the Muslim immigrants raped the girl, the Finnish police went to their usual lengths to obscure the identities and nationalities of the suspected perpetrators. just as the American media obscured a photo of the man who shot a police officer in a Virginia bus station in March 2016. Remember? There was no picture. We didn't see a picture of James Brown III. See, generally, the only perps who are displayed are those who look like Timothy McVeigh, those who are descendants of the Iceman. But the Iceman has become a nice man. I watched a show on the History Channel called The Vikings. It is an exception to everything that is wrong with the entertainment industry. I was amazed at the production values. The writing is astounding. The historical accuracy is unbelievable. There was a scene in The Vikings worth discussing. I'll summarize it as briefly as I can. In the scene, a bunch of kids in the Viking village were throwing around some leather-wrapped toy that looked like a ball. There was a little boy in a wagon who was brought out to watch them play. The little boy had been handpicked by his mother, who was married to the Viking chief, to be taught how to be a Viking. He was being taught the old ways of the Viking culture by one of the most ferocious of the Vikings. His mother had begged the ferocious Viking not to let her son forget the Viking ways. The boy's father, you see, had adopted a Christian priest captured during one of their raids on England. At first, the Vikings had treated the Christian priest as a slave. But eventually, the Christian priest preached Christianity to the Viking chief and in so doing weakened him. He became weak in the eyes of the wife, a Viking woman who wanted her boy to be raised as a Viking, not as a weakling. So she secretly took the boy and told the ferocious Viking, "Raise him as a Viking." During this scene, the kid was indoors, being taught the Viking ways. Some other little boys were playing outside with the ball. So the Viking warrior who was teaching the kid how to be a Viking took him outside, where the ball was being thrown about by laughing boys. And the ball came to the kid in the wagon, and it bounced out of his hand, and the other boys threw it back to the kid. The kid held on to it, and one of the other boys ran up to take the ball out of the kid's hands. The kid grabbed a stick or something, wrapped the other boy over the head with it, and killed him. A little 3 or 4 or 5-year-old boy just picked up something and smacked the boy in the head and killed him, broke his head open. The mother rushed out and held him and said, "Don't worry, don't worry, don't worry, you didn't do anything wrong." Flash to the end of the show, when there was an interview with the director-writer, who's a genius. He talked about that sequence, and he said, "I wanted to show that the kid was being taught how to be a Viking without a conscience. And they'd done a good job, because he hit the boy. He didn't know what he did exactly. There's blood all over the place, and his mother said, 'Don't worry, don't worry, you didn't do anything wrong,' meaning they were raising him as a Viking to have no conscience whatsoever, to make certain that he's in the warrior culture. You understand where I'm going with this? Because I'm about to make a jump. Let's flash forward to ISIS. They have no conscience. But instead of saying that they are just like the Vikings and they have no conscience, they wrap their no-conscience subhumanity in a religion. Then they tell you it's the religion mumbo-jumbo that directs them to kill women and children, bury them alive, chop off heads, set them on fire. Mumbo-jumbo. Mumbo-jumbo. Do you understand where I'm going with this? From the Iceman to the nice man. Now, let's go to America. ISIS is training children to have no conscience, to kill with no conscience, while here in America, we have people screaming about microaggression on college campuses. We have boys being taught that what they are thinking is aggressing on minorities in some way. They're being arrested for thinking about what they want to do with girls, for being boys. Tell me, who will win this year? The Iceman or the nice man? Think about it. Think about what I have just written, because in those few words, I have encapsulated for you the entire battle of civilizations that is going on. I will say right now that unless this insanity that is coming off the campuses and out of the psychotic left is resisted, we are finished. Not only as a society, but as a nation. We will disappear. But also as a race, because there is a war against a certain race right now in America. A black man shoots a cop in the face, says he hates cops. Immediately the media narrative shifts to police brutality. The next day there are marches across America against police. Why? Because black lives matter? You mean white lives don't matter? Only one race's life matters? You're not seeing what they're doing to you. I know this is hard for you to read. I understand that this is difficult for you to accept. I understand that this is a shock to the system. But as doctors will tell you, sometimes a caustic medicine is necessary to cure an illness. And unless all of us resist this insanity, call it whatever you want, liberalism, pacifism, communism, socialism, anarchism, it doesn't matter to me what you call it, it's suicide. That's what it is. It's national, cultural, and racial suicide to put up with this insanity. When you let 0.5% of the population dictate to the rest of the population, the whole population is done. In North Carolina, 0.5% of the psychotic population says, "I'm a man today, but I want to go into the woman's room. So I'll say, I feel like a woman." The governor says, "No, we're not going to permit that." All of a sudden, the 0.5% of the population goes berserk and calls him a racist, a homophobe, a thisophobe, a thatophobe. And the governor caves in. Insanity. Suicide. Cultural insanity. Cultural suicide. The death of a nation. The death of a population. But that's not the only triumph of the nice man over the Iceman. I'm going to talk about Obama boasting about the fact how he has denuked America. He deballed and denuked the military. The military is now passive to the psychotic leftists running the country, where surgery for transgenders will now take priority over combat vets waiting for treatment. What a sane utilization of resources! And, might I ask, why permit transgenders into the military who demand immediate and free surgical realignment of their private parts, expensive hormone treatments, and counseling? How can they serve while recovering from this sexual mutilation? Is this a rational use of resources or the deranged priorities of a madman? Then he talks about reducing the risk of terrorists getting their hands on nuclear material.